This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. Now, if you are a football fan, you would know that Jose Mourinho's appointment as Manchester United's manager was reportedly held up by negotiations over his image rights. What are image rights and how does it affect an athlete or sports professional like Mourinho? Well, in the studio with me today to help us understand how income is made beyond the pitch is Richard Wee and Leslie Lim. They are lawyers who specialize in sports law. Richard, perhaps I can start with you. What are image rights?
Thanks for inviting us. Image rights. Basically, it's the monetizing of a person's looks, style, their way of, in this context, the way they play the game. So for an example, the style of currently Cristiano Ronaldo, every time he scores a goal, he will run to the end of the corner flag and then make that
goal celebration.
Celebration, heroic stand, you know. Like, and that's now becoming an icon, you know. And another one would be Tiger Woods and Nadal, where Nadal has actually their own logo. Even Roger Federer has his own logo created by that sports club, by that sports company. So that's how the players, athletes, they monetize their image, their name, and call it image rights.
How did the concept of image right come about and why was it needed at the time?
So perhaps we can look back a little bit further back on perhaps when the earlier days of Premier League, and this was when the agreements between clubs and players were much simpler in the sense where players basically just take home a salary or a wage, and that salary or wage would actually be subject to income tax. And ironically, how image rights came about was it's actually a method to avoid tax. So some brilliant financial advisor came up with a structure whereby players would still have 50% of their salaries and wages in a separate agreement, and that would be subject to the usual income tax as per the English law. But separately, image rights would be paid to an offshore company where taxes would be subject to a regular corporate rate, which is almost 50% of the income tax in the UK. So that's basically how it first came about, as tax avoidance, actually.
This is so, in the UK instance, it's
yes,
tax avoidance. So now that we know it's about tax avoidance, have they done anything about it?
So interestingly, I think some of the first few foreign players that were subject to this was, I think, familiar names, Dennis Bergkamp, Patrick Vieira. And of course, this eventually came to the attention of the English Inland Revenue Board. And they brought it up to the Special Commission. And after deliberating over the matter, the Special Commission actually came to a decision that such offshore image rights deals were, in fact, a legitimate commercial contract because they were being assessed at a fair value. So, yeah, it has come to the attention of the authorities.
Richard, before we started the interview, you were telling me that in the US, this was not a tax avoidance strategy. It started because they wanted to commercialize sports. Did image rights in the States came out of the same reason or did it have a different trajectory?
From what we can track back, basically, sports in the States, image rights came about due to the increased interest in sports, particularly after World War II. Eventually, by the 60s, the sports association, clubs, they decided to monetize the image of their own players. They created what was a copyright. And we got big superstars, most of them are the NBA and the NFL, and to some extent NHL, becoming huge superstars using their names, their image. The sports clubs and the association decided to convert it into intellectual property and copyright their names, etc. And that's how it grew. Basically, in the world now, I think the Americans are very much ahead of everyone else in terms of how they conceptually create a property out of a person's name, you know.
Yeah.
And they're brilliant with it. So they started in the 60s, not really about tax. Of course, the consequences of doing what they do, eventually they will avoid some sort of tax. So Leslie is spot on But Leslie's example just now was more of the British experience. And whereas in America, in the 60s especially, it was more for commercial reasons.
Coming back to Mourinho's case, it was reported that the name Jose Mourinho, Chelsea registered the name Jose Mourinho and his signature as a European trademark in 2005, which allows them to use it to sell anything from toiletries and teddy bears and clothing to jewelry. Is it normal for an individual to not own their image rights?
Yeah, in the British football, it is very normal for anyone related to the game to have a trademark, or in this case, the name converted into a trademark. It's very common. So as Mourinho, his image is probably when he came to UK for the first time from Porto, he was so different. There was no manager like him at the time. Even his name was different, Jose Mourinho. And when he came up with that iconic phrase, the special one, you got to put your hats off to the Chelsea's commercial people. They were brilliant. They immediately took his name, trademarked it. So it's quite common if you go to the stores of football clubs, like when Sir Alex was the manager for Manchester United, you can see things being sold with his name there. Even, well, some of you may know I support Everton. So it's a small club. Some people call it a small club up north. But Everton used to have merchandises for David Moyes. And before he was relieved of his duty, we used to have merchandises for Roberto Martinez. Not much compared to the main players, but they are. Let me share something with you. Actually, you know, there have been attempts by football players to try and register their name, but fail. One classic one was Mark Hughes. Mark Hughes tried to register his name long ago in the 90s.
During his Manchester United.
But because his name was quite common. And from what we understand, Alan Shearer managed to trademark his name, particularly because of his peculiar fame as a really good football player at the time in the 90s. So there have been cases like Paul Gascoigne, his name, nickname Gaza, is trademarked. So anybody wants to use that name have to go through his company. So it's quite common for the managers, or in this case, the manager, to have their name trademarked. My only surprise is that it's still with Chelsea. So we thought by now, you know, he would have followed Mourinho wherever he went.
Well, that's very sad and tragic for Mark Hughes, who is not able to commercialize or capitalize on his name.
Oh, he did. In other ways. I can't remember what his trade name could be. Sparky, because that was his nickname, but he managed to monetize it in other ways. Yeah, but there have been other players who tried to trademark their name. They can't. So they either come up with a logo or they come up with a nickname and then trademark it. It's quite normal. But there's great value in sports name. Sports connotes health. A healthy living, it embodies the spirit of a human being. You know, we all try to always be better. We try to be the best. And any sport, it embodies that spirit. So that is the darling of every single potential sponsor. So if you are a sponsor and you want to reflect your company as a spirited company, you know, you're the up-and-coming or you're the best, you should associate yourself with the athlete. So the athlete, on the other hand, shouldn't just allow their name to be used. They should conceptualize the name, convert it into intellectual property, and then start trading it.
Leslie, yeah. Richard has just given me a lot of reasons why, if I'm a superstar, to own my own name. But what would be the incentive for someone like Mourinho to give up his trademark?
Well, the very, very simple answer to that would actually be money. To basically be paid for your image to be used. So just flowing from what Richard just said, the reason as to why sponsors would want to use athletes to be that face of their brand basically stems from the goodwill that is attached to a particular athlete. We can draw a comparison of, say, of course, the very popular David Beckham. He has a very clean image. He's now branded himself as a very family man, despite the many tattoos on his body. As compared to, say, Mario Balotelli, who is infamous for his off-the-field
antics.
Yeah, antics, I would say. So if I were a sponsor, I would, of course, want David Beckham to be the face of my brand. And that is the goodwill that he has created for himself. associated to his name over the years. And if I'm David Beckham, you know, if you want to use my name, you have to pay me for it. It is as simple as that, actually.
I'm speaking today to lawyers Richard Wee and Leslie Lim about the uses and abuses of image rights in sports. We'll talk more about how a stronger framework in sports law can elevate a country's sporting prowess after the break. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teik. My guests today are lawyers Richard Wee and Leslie Lim. They've been helping me to understand this concept in sports law called image rights and how it's being used to create marketing phenomena.
Most of the sports icon I can think of are Americans. Was Beckham one of the pioneers of a personality outside the US to be able to nurture his brand Beckham?
If you're looking purely about football, I think in the 80s, let's start with UK, that's where the idea of commercializing football became an apparent issue. Clubs like, just by coincidence, Everton was among the first club to have sponsors on their shirt in 83. So it evolved from that branding of with a brand on the jersey, and eventually more and more players start to brand themselves. So like in UK, I think among the big superstars would have been people like Gary Lineker. He managed to monetize his team very well. When he went to Japan to play in the inaugural stage at Japan J-League, he had a fair deal of trademark name too, you know, over and above his football contract. So it evolved from there, and I wouldn't say that only Americans are well known for that. In fact, now I think almost every single top player in Europe would have their name trademarked.
Is it assumed that an individual owns his or her own image rights until someone attempts to purchase it?
Well, there will be a situation where, let's take Jamie Vardy, now a huge star from Leicester, and I'm pretty sure he would have protected his image rights, even though he came down from the lower leagues up to the Premier League. But I wouldn't be surprised if his image rights contract is with Leicester instead of with him. And I guess Leicester will now definitely try to use, maybe the word exploit would be too strong, but use his name as much as possible to sell Leicester to neutral fans. So it is quite common for players to own their name. The extent of their ownership will depend on the strength of their commercial position in the sports. So if you are a fairly unknown player in the third division, you'll probably be still known within the community of where you're staying. Your club may want to trademark your name, but they can only sell your name to that area where you're playing. But if you are a decent player in London, one of the London clubs, your name may be known even here in Malaysia. So your agent and your advisors may want to protect your name, and so that if possible, they want to sell your name here in Malaysia. Example, as an example. So normally the player will own the name as long as they can. But the moment they become professional players, if I'm their advisor, Leslie is their advisor, we will tell the player, immediately trademark your name. Even though you're 19-year-old, trademark first. Keep your name first. And then form a company, keep it there. And then the company will be the one who manage your rights for you.
Is it any different from an artist protecting her work, his work, or novel, or character?
Similar. So if you are a famous singer, like in Malaysia, most of our actors and singers, they have maintained their image rights. But most of, I think, our Malaysian local artists don't form companies to own their rights. But they do. They do protect as much as they can.
How long would an image rights last? Like, because all of us were surprised Chelsea still holds the rights to Jose Mourinho's name. Do they set their own term, or is there a template or a guidance that we can look to?
From what we have perused in Europe, there is no particular set timeline. I can sign a contract with you until, let's say, you are an upcoming soccer player, and then, and my contract with you is for 3 years. I will use your name. So there you go. I will own your name for 3 years. So in Chelsea's case, without looking at the contract, we suspect it is probably one of those contracts where I'm going to hold your name, full stop. And either they forgot about it, or Mourinho didn't bother about it, or Mourinho just left it behind. That we're not sure, but it's definitely not a time limit contract. You know, it really depends on the two parties.
Image rights is basically the right to own, to use, and to administer a particular mark or a brand or a name. And in order to see the law behind that, we actually need to look to intellectual property law. And I will look at the Malaysian intellectual property law. So it really depends on the manner in which you have registered that particular mark or brand or name. If you have registered it as a trademark, it would actually last for 10 years from the date of registration. And then you need to look at whose name is it registered under. So if say I'm the owner of Nicole David, but I give consent to Milo to use Nicole David for, say, a period of 3 years, there is no infringement because I've given the consent to Milo to use it for a specific period of time. But it then goes back to the registration and the particular intellectual property law to determine the period of validity of the particular brand and name and whatnot.
In Malaysia, how strong is our framework for the enforcement of image rights?
Well, we have a fairly effective government agency doing this. In fact, we both Leslie and I know a few Malaysian solicitors whose expertise is actually enforcing laws against counterfeits. So yeah, it's quite effective in Malaysia, perhaps not very, very effective, but yes, there are enforcement and there are known cases where the relevant authorities would have stormed into certain gudangs and confiscated fake products of certain famous items.
Yeah, so I'll just jump in here. The Malaysian Intellectual Property Corporation has a legal framework in place. So the relevant acts, so the Trademark Act, the Copyright Act, the Patents Act, do provide for remedies in cases of infringement. So I'll just give some examples. You can claim for, say, monetary damages as compensation. People have also resorted to going to the civil courts seeking for injunctions. The Copyright Act does even provide criminal charges of up to 5 years. The Trademark Act allows for legal action to be taken, either through civil action, or you can even lodge complaints in the Enforcement Division under the appropriate Trademark Description Act 1972. So there is a legal framework in place for Malaysian, but then again, that again depends on whether you have or have not registered that particular trademark in Malaysia itself.
Based on our conversation thus far, it sounds like the Americans and the Europeans have very different frameworks when it comes to IP. Is Malaysian based on the European or UK model instead of the
American? We are very much based on the UK model. It's just that in Malaysia, the awareness, the three issues are number one, the awareness of whether or not an athlete ought to monetize or convert the image into intellectual property is fairly absent. That's the first. Number two, even if the athlete or in some cases the association is aware of it and wish to monetize it, they are not very sure how you're going to do it. Even if they engage intellectual property lawyers, we call them IP lawyers, they will be able to easily trademark a person's name or a club or association. Then comes the third one. What can you do with it? In Malaysia, you know, generally the commercial position in Malaysia is that most sponsorship or a partnership or collaboration doesn't involve sports. And even when we have big sponsors coming in for sports, it's always a huge government-owned companies or government-related companies who would buy over the names of badminton or sometimes football or recently was squash. I think partly because of Nicole David. But individually, that small swimming club in Kelantan, for example, that up-and-coming badminton club in Kedah, no one is monetizing it for them. Partly it's because they don't know what to do or they don't know how to do it. And that's where I think we need to create more awareness about that.
So we've been talking about personal image rights so far, but when a player is part of a club, does it complicate matters Because a club would have their own sponsorship deals, and the player who comes to the club would have their own personal endorsement deals as well.
Yeah, so there is quite a fine line between individual image rights and team image rights. So the guiding law is that if it's a team image right, it would have to involve, of say, three players or more. So if you notice when football clubs release their new kits, the poster is always three players or more. And even then, the selection process of who makes up those three players, there is probably a lot of thought process given to particularly image rights, because the team would want to avoid having to pay that individual image rights. So there is a lot of a thought process put behind things like that.
All of the players would be roughly the same size, and one wouldn't be more prominent than the
yes,
other.
Yes, correct. So even when, say, Premier League does a highlight or a promotional video for the next season, you will see that they're very careful not to feature one player for too long. At the most, just a couple of seconds, and they will move on to the next player. Again, that is one of the very few methods which they use to avoid paying individual image rights to that particular player.
If I'm a producer of a game franchise like FIFA, it's going to be so expensive because I have to pay each and every player, I have to pay each and every team that I want to feature the likeness of or use their logo in the game, isn't it?
Yes, correct. So again, it boils back to the individual's image rights or the team's image rights. So from what I know, I believe EA Sports, which is the creator of FIFA, the FIFA video game, they had contracts with Rooney and Messi. So then they then have the right to use Rooney's picture or Messi's picture on front of that video game cover. But it is subject to the negotiations between the video game manufacturer or the creator with the, either the team or the individual player.
So speaking of video game, there's this very interesting case that I read about a former college basketball player who sued the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association. This is the body that organizes all college sports in the US. What happened was he found himself in a video game, the likeness of himself with his stats, his weight, and his team. He was playing for UCLA at the time. And he was not compensated for any of it.
Yeah, it's actually the O'Bannon's case. Basically, it's peculiar to America. There's an antitrust element in the case, and antitrust is something like anti-monopoly. In O'Bannon's case, what happened is that he has long stopped playing for UCLA, and but NCAA was still using his name, image, etc., and he wanted them to stop it. Now, in US, it's very peculiar because the school sports, we in Malaysia, we call it school sports. So in America, the school sports would be something like the high school, college, and universities. It is huge. The value of the game, football, or American football, of course, when I say football, there, basketball, goes into millions of US dollars. So the NCAA and whichever the mother organization which controls that sports, they have a fair bit of commercial strength. They control virtually every single young player's name, image, etc. They sell that name and take that money and reinvest into the sports. In O'Bannon's case, it's about when can they stop using it. So he won the case, the player won the case, which I think is good for the players. It means that even though I may have allowed an association to use my name, but if I'm not playing under that association anymore, the name ought to return to me.
Because they are famous for not paying college players to preserve their amateur status. Do you think something like this can happen in Malaysia? Because our school sports seems quite competitive.
Well, in Malaysia, I think there have been attempts by the relevant government agencies to try and invest more money into school sports. But by nature, I think Malaysian school sports are very much really in the spirit of true sports. Hardly any money involved. You still see young school players wearing torn jerseys playing in the middle of a horrible pitch, or an athlete running with really old
broken shoes,
you know. So we've seen it many times, and so in Malaysia, even if we try to monetize this, I'm not sure how far would our culture accept it. Because we, I suppose, as a, some of us may be parents, so we may not want our kids to be so overtly exposed to commercialization at such a young age when they are playing sports. Some parents would just want the kid to play for the sake of playing, you know, not for the money. So our culture is slightly different. But recently, we've noticed the Ministry of Youth and Sports. Our minister seems to be very active in trying to increase value in sports. And I think he's actually trying to invest more attention to sports in school, like the current ongoing national football program. We have an under 14, under 18 team under the ministry. So maybe this is the beginning. I'm not sure. But I think it's actually a good move. I think whether parents like it or not, sports and money go hand in hand. And schools do need some kind of investment. We don't need to make a 16-year-old player a millionaire, but the 16-year-old player should get proper athletes' equipments to manage himself or herself.
Yeah, maybe then sports would be seen as a legitimate career path for our young kids.
Yes. That should be the way. And I think a huge chunk of Malaysians only hear the word image, but they have no idea what is it about. Sports lawyers in particular will be very well aware of this. And it's a good, you look at the countries where sports are actively managed, properly managed, they have a very, very powerful sports culture.
A lot more to talk about. I hope we get to do a follow-up when the transfer season is upon us after the Euro to talk more about the legalities of sports and how it relates to Malaysia. Richard, Leslie, thank you very much.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks, Indik.
You've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.